This is Audible.
Defiance Audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker War. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, and Terrence Aselford. Episode 5. Everyone Goes to Golgotha. They were burning the poets, hanging the troubadours, impaling the satirists. Blood and screams and horror. Just another day in hell. The court was a dark, dangerous place now, reflecting the mind of its ruler. The Empress Lionstone 14, the worshipped and adored, sat on her iron throne, as though she might leap down from it at any moment to rend and savage some unfortunate enemy. She wore shimmering white battle armor, which together with her pale face and long blonde hair made her look like some vengeful family ghost. On her head sat the tall spiky crown cut from a single huge diamond, the symbol of power and authority in the empire. At the base of her throne, her maids-in-waiting crouched watchfully like the guard dogs they were, naked and unashamed as animals, mind-wiped and surgically altered to be loyal unto death. They watched the court through cybernetic senses, ready for any threat to their beloved mistress. Floating on the air before the throne, dozens of view screens showed scenes from all across the empire, scenes of blood and chaos and the roar of battle. Standing quietly before the Iron Throne, at what they hoped was a safe distance, were two of the few people, apart from guards and their victims, still admitted to the Imperial Court. General Shaw Beckett, and the warrior prime, the Lord High Dram. They were both men of war, but all they had in common was their loyalty. Tall and imposing, Dram wore his usual jet-black robes over black battle armor, looking like some gore crow fresh from the battlefield. Beckett, on the other hand, looked a mess, as always. His carefully tailored battle armor couldn't hide the fact that he was seriously overweight, his robes were decidedly scruffy, and he carried himself with immense calm, but little authority. He was smoking an evil-smelling cigar, and not caring where the smoke went. And all around, the dead and the dying. Unfortunates who'd caught Lionstone's attention at just the wrong time hung limply from their ropes or chains. Others denied an easy death, a ballerina with broken legs, a poet with his eyes gouged out, a castrated rebel leader, and many more, crawled around on their hands and knees, biting back their screams to prevent further punishment, begging quietly for just a little water. Lionstone looked away from the view screens and turned her attention to Beckett and Dram.
General Beckett, we have called you here to place you in sole charge of this planet's defenses. We put Golgotha into your hands. Guard it well and keep it safe.
Beckett stared at her blankly.
But, Your Majesty, I assumed I'd been brought here to take command of your fleet. Who else is better qualified for this than I am?
Dram, you will command my fleet. Beckett is too soft. Take my fleet and crush my enemies, Dram. Break them and scatter them and show them no mercy, just as you did on Viramond. I am Empress, and I will be obeyed.
She smiled an unpleasant smile. Dram nodded in agreement. Beckett stood silent in his shame.
Do you think you would do well to protect yourself further, even here?
Don't worry yourself about such things. I have sent for the best of the best to come here to be my personal bodyguards. No one will get past Investigator Razor and Kid Death.
On the surface, the fighting went on. The Empress gave orders to turn the Grendels, the merciless killing machine aliens found in the vaults of the sleepers, loose in the streets. Vicious monsters in blood-red spiked silicon armor. They moved too swiftly for the human eye to follow, killing all they came across. Weapons were useless against them. Too strong to be fought, too fast to be faced, they moved inexorably through the crowded streets, leaving only blood and slaughter in their wake. Unfortunately, the Empress's control over these creatures was very limited. Once released from the enforced pacification of their cybernetic yokes, they killed every living thing they encountered, no matter which side they happened to be on. Beyond any control or guidance, they rampaged through the streets, scarlet devils from an alien hell, and the dead piled up behind them. If Lionstone had had more of them, they might have turned the tide. But their numbers were limited, and so was the damage they could cause in a city overrun with battling armies. The Underground sent battle espers against the aliens, but many of the espers died just from making contact with the Grendel's mines. They were too alien, too different, too awful to be faced. And so the Underground called on the Elves, the hardline Esper Liberation Front, who sent in the Poulters and the Firestarters. Soon, roiling psi-storms blazed through the streets, ripping the Grendels apart and incinerating the bloody fragments. The aliens fell one by one, fighting to the last against an enemy they could neither see nor reach. And as they were broken and consumed by raging fires, both sides cheered the Espers as heroes. Never before had aliens been allowed to roam homeworld streets, killing humans, and many on both sides saw this as another sign of Lionstone's growing madness. Soldiers and civilians who had been forced to stand by helplessly as the Grendels butchered their comrades and loved ones now cursed the Empress and went to fight alongside the rebels. But the rebels remained outnumbered and outgunned, and the longer the fighting went on, the worse the odds against them grew. They had to strike quickly while they still had the advantage of surprise and take control of Golgotha, or the rebellion could still fall apart and fail for all its successes. The military knew this and played a waiting game, holding key areas and refusing to give way. Blood spilled and men and women died on both sides. The tides of battle went this way and that, and the leaders of the Underground began to grow desperate. It was beginning to look as though all their hopes now depended on a small group of heroes and legends who hadn't even made an appearance yet. But the whole rebellion could stand or fall on the actions of Owen Deathstalker and his companions. The Chandrakor standing of Giles Deathstalker, the original home and sanctuary of the Deathstalker clan, dropped out of hyperspace and fell into orbit over the planet Golgotha. A huge stone castle with its own star drive and force shield, and many other hidden surprises, it hung silently over the homeworld of Empire, like a specter from the past, from the great days of Empire, before the dream became a nightmare, and good men fell as the bad came to power. The ancient stone gleamed whitely in the light of Golgotha's sun, pale as a ghost, the specter at the feast. The old retainer returned at last, to kick the usurpers out. After 943 years, the Deathstalker standing had finally come home. Giles stood at parade rest in the great hall of the standing, his back to a blazing fire, studying the planet below as it turned slowly on the giant view screen at the end of the hall. Clad in his usual battered armor, grubby furs, golden armlets, and mercenary scalp lock, he looked more like some barbarian warrior out of humanity's distant past than the first warrior prime of the Empire, hero and legend to all the Empire for almost a millennium. His long sword hung in a scabbard down his back, the leather-wrapped hilt peering watchfully over his shoulder, as though only waiting to be called into action. He was the original Deathstalker, namer and founder of his clan, back from exile to a homeworld that had forgotten him. His distant descendant, Owen Deathstalker, stood a little away, with his comrade-in-arms, Hazel Dark, at his side. There was a closeness between them that hadn't been so clear before, as though they had discovered something important about each other and themselves during the invasion of Mistworld. They stood tall and confident, and strength and power hung about them like an aura of greatness. They wore no armor, but while Owen bore only his sword and disruptor, Hazel was packing as many weapons as she could carry. Hazel believed in guns. They'd come a long way since they first met, in a field on Viramond which no longer existed, and it was hard to see in Owen and Hazel the reclusive scholar and reluctant pirate they'd once been. They had come into their destiny, and it showed. On the other side of the enormous fireplace stood Jack Random, the legendary professional rebel. The broken-down old man Owen had found hiding out in Mistport such a short time ago had disappeared now, replaced by a strong, muscular figure in the prime of his years. Jack Random had recreated himself through his faith and his power and his courage, and the mysterious powers of the Madness Maze, to be a hero and a legend one more time. Just standing there, calm and relaxed, he looked ready to take on the whole damned empire by himself. And if there were blood and savagery and slaughter of the foe along the way, that suited him just fine. Close by his side, looking as though she belonged there and always had, Ruby Journey. She wore black leathers under white furs, and was as dauntingly attractive as the kind of flower whose pollen brings uneasy dreams. Unlike the others who'd passed through the Madness Maze, Ruby Journey hadn't really changed much at all. It just refined her. The former bounty hunter who had usually brought her victims in dead had now become a rebel who had just increased the size of her enemy. She saw great opportunities for financial improvement in the chaos on Golgotha, and didn't intend to let herself be distracted by unimportant things like politics. Random could deal with things like that. He understood them. Alexander Storm, that old and tired man, had been a part of the rebellion most of his life. As a young man, he'd fought at Jack's side in battles beyond counting. Once a brilliant swordsman and a laughing adventurer, he was now weighed down with age and bitterness, and concentrated his remaining energies in helping to determine the Underground's policies and strategies. And if he was jealous that his old friend Jack had somehow grown young and vital again, and he had not, he kept it to himself. Mostly. Finally, there was young Jack Random and Jenny Psycho. They stood together some distance away from the others, because no one else would stand next to them. And even they did their best to ignore each other. Young Jack had arrived on the scene out of nowhere, claiming to be the real professional rebel, and it had to be said he looked the part. Tall and powerful in his silver battle armor chased with gold, he positively radiated strength. Unbeatable with a sword in his hand, already he was being hailed as the savior of Mistport during the invasion, as though he'd singly turned back the Empire's invasion forces. It still wasn't clear which of the two Randoms was the real one. They were both powerful fighters and cunning strategists. So the Underground, expedient as ever, made use of both of them. Jenny Psycho was a different matter. The Empire had broken something deep inside her, and it had healed crookedly. But then she was touched by the enigmatic uber-esper Mater Mundi, and now Jenny Psycho was very powerful indeed. Her presence all but crackled in the air around her, like a thunderstorm waiting to happen. She lived only for revenge, relying on the rebellion to give her focus and purpose. Owen Deathstalker moved over to join his ancestor Giles beside the view screen.
How does it feel to be home again, after so long? Is it what you expected?
No.
Giles didn't look away from the screen.
Everyone I ever knew or cared for down there is long dead and gone to dust. Instead, the place is overrun with clones and espers. The families have grown soft or corrupt or insane. And the Empire I remember no longer exists. I feel like a ghost, fighting a ghost's old battles, not noticing that the world has moved on without me. The Empire was falling apart even in my day, but I never dreamed it would end up like this. There are things we need to discuss. The Madness Maze changed us all, but it would seem our abilities have been developing in different ways. I have learned to teleport. You have become a psychokinetic. Jack and Ruby have manifested pyrokinetic abilities. And Hazel can summon alternative versions of herself from different timelines. I don't even pretend to understand how that works. None of this is what I expected.
Why shouldn't we have changed in different ways? Jack Randon had joined them. We're different people. And what do we really know about the maze? That was probably an alien artifact, that no one knows how old it might have been, or what its original purpose, and that the last people to go through it created the Haydenmen. Not much to go on, is it?
We need to split up. Spread our talents as widely as possible. Hit Lionstone on as many fronts as possible. Now, everyone, pay attention, please. We need to split into the following groups.
I'm not happy about this. The last time we let the Underground split us up, David and the Summer Isle went off on their own. Now David's dead and Kid Death's joined the opposition.
I miss David. I never really got to know him. And now I never will. But I miss him now he's gone. I'm the last of the direct line. The last of the Deathstalkers.
That's not what's upsetting you. You're just angry because since Viramon's been destroyed, you can't go home again. You can never have your old life back. That's all you ever really wanted out of this rebellion, isn't it?
I don't know. Maybe. I never wanted to be a warrior. I was happy being a scholar and an historian, with no pressures and no responsibilities. But I wouldn't go back, even if I could. I've seen too much. And David, he was a pain in the ass, but he had potential. There was so much I could have taught him. And now he's gone. Murdered by Kit Summerisle. The same smiling bastard who killed my father. Whatever happens down below, the Summerisle is mine.
Good. You're starting to sound like a Deathstalker. You've come a long way, historian.
There was an urgent chiming from the viewscreen. Giles switched to the new incoming signal, and Golgotha disappeared, replaced by Finley Campbell, Evangeline Schreck, and Julian Skye, their faces filling the screen. They looked harried. Finley spoke.
What's holding you people up? We need you down here now. Everything's gone to hell in a handcart in the Parade of the Endless, the one city above all we have to hold. Just your presence will help to inspire the fighters. You've become heroes, legends, not least through Toby Schreck's coverage, and people will follow you where they won't follow us.
Your powers could be the turning point.
Evangeline was at Finley's side.
God knows we need one. We're fighting on so many fronts, it's hard to make any real breakthrough.
What about the Haydenmen? I've been worried about them. Are they behaving themselves?
Surprisingly enough, yes.
It was Julian Skye's turn to speak.
Their ships are only taking out the targets we gave them, and their ground fighting has proved a blessing. The augmented men have been behaving impeccably. We've even had reports they've been taking prisoners, rather than just killing everything that moves.
Can we return to more pressing matters, namely the unholy mess and the Parade of the Endless?
Get your collective asses down here, now.
Understood. We'll be there. We haven't come this far to miss out on the ending.
Finley cut off the signal, and the viewscreen went blank. Giles reassumed command.
Now pay attention. The only way into the palace is by the underground train system, run and monitored by the palace's security systems. The train stations are well guarded, and the train compartments themselves are fitted with lethal gas jets just in case. However, Owen has discovered records of a number of old maintenance tunnels, long abandoned and apparently forgotten. We can use those to bypass the security guards entirely and gain access to the train safely. Owen, Hazel, and I will undertake this mission.
Hold everything.
Suddenly, the AI Ozymandias murmured in Owen's ear.
Sorry to interrupt, boss, but your ancestors' words have tripped a file hidden deep within my memory by your father. He knew about these trains and tunnels, and has given me all the necessary security codes to get you onto the trains and into the palace.
Owens vocalized.
Are you sure about this? If you get just one of those codes wrong, we're all dead.
Trust me. This is the real thing, Owen. Your father believed in planning ahead.
Owen passed on the AI's words, and there was an awkward pause. Owen had always maintained he'd used his maze powers to completely destroy the treacherous AI. When Ozymandias turned out to be working for the Empire and tried to use control words it had implanted in Owen and Hazel to make them kill the others.
Only sometime later, Oz, or something claiming to be Oz, turned up in Owen's head again. No one but Owen could hear its voice, but the information it occasionally volunteered was always reliable. For the rest of the time, Owen tried hard to ignore it.
Your father would naturally have tried to gain access to those codes. I suppose it's possible he could have hidden them in your AI for safekeeping. There's no way of testing them here. I suppose we'll find out whether they're the real thing when we get there. It would certainly simplify things a lot. Even with our powers, breaking out of the power station was always going to be a major undertaking. So, it would appear we'll just have to trust Oz, whoever or whatever he really is. Jack Random and Ruby Journey will lead the gravity sled attack on the family towers, as arranged with the underground. It's vital we keep the Empress's troops pinned down in their towers, well away from the main action. We want them preoccupied with their own survival, rather than the Empress's. Random, we've been through the logistics of this with the underground. You know what to do. A flotilla of gravity sleds is waiting just outside the Parade of the Endless for you to lead them in. Ruby Journey will, of course, accompany you. If only because no one else feels safe around her.
You say the nicest things.
I'm going too.
Alexander Storm piped up.
I haven't waited this long to miss out on the downfall of the families.
Of course you're coming with us, Alex. I wouldn't dream of doing this without my old comrade at my side. Ruby decided to keep a watchful eye on Storm. Random had a blind spot where Storm was concerned. He still thought of his old friend as he used to be, when Storm was young and swift and daring, and hell on wheels with a sword in his hand. Random couldn't seem to accept that while he was young and strong again, Storm wasn't.
Now that that's decided, we come to young Jack Random. You will make your own landing dirtside, and team up with Finley Campbell and Julian Skye. Your mission is to take out and occupy the security troops' main command center in the Parade of the Endless. They've still got comm channels open, so they're practically running the city's defenses single-handed. Once they're out of the loop, the security forces will fall apart, and the Parade of the Endless will be ours for the taking. And once the city is ours, only the Empress herself stands between us and control of Golgotha. And from Golgotha, we will form the new empire that rises from the ashes of the old. And finally...
About time you got around to me.
Jenny Psycho scowled fiercely.
I was beginning to think you'd forgotten all about me.
If only that were possible. You will orchestrate the use of Aspers on the planet's surface and liaise among the various rebel factions. Like the two Randoms, the Aspers should follow you unquestioningly just because of who you are. Try and keep your people under control. Aspers can do a lot of damage when they're all pointed in the same direction. But the last thing we need are Respaloo's cannon going off all over the place.
You presume too much. You're not in charge here. In the end, the Underground will win this war, and the Underground will decide what replaces Lionstone's empire. We've been preparing for this day for centuries. Espers, clones, the committed and the faithful. We won't be brushed aside in the moment of our triumph by a bunch of newcomers, even if they are heroes and legends.
We can argue about who gets the credit later. First, we have to win this war. Let's make a move, people. It's time to go to work.
Right.
Owen grinned about him. See you all in hell. In the huge court of the Imperial Palace, the hell that Lionstone had made was growing worse. The surroundings continued to change from moment to moment, reflecting the Empress's darkening mood, and the underworld grew steadily more disturbing. Bram stood where he had been told to stand, beside the Iron Throne, trying not to draw attention to himself. Valentine Wolfe had been summoned to court, and stood patiently before the throne, poisoning the air even further just by being there, and looking pleased as punch about it. His long black curls had been freshly oiled, falling to his shoulders in artful disarray. His mascarad eyes gleamed with fever-bright intensity from his bone-pale face, and his scarlet smile seemed wider than ever. He was calmly pulling the legs from some squealing black thing in his hands. Bram hoped it was an insect. Valentine Wolfe had come to hell, and looked perfectly at home there. Bram stood facing him, not because he chose to, but because Lionstone hadn't given him permission to move.
You! I should have you both executed. This is all your fault. I had things under control until you went mad on Viramond. All you had to do was pacify one insignificant backwater planet, and you couldn't even do that for me.
Both Dram and Valentine had been following Lionstone's specific instructions on Viramond, but neither of them was stupid enough to remind her of that.
I'm going to have to send you out to defend me, because you're all I've got. Valentine, you will take control of all the war machines currently on Golgotha. There aren't that many, but do what you can with them. Dram, I want you up on the surface, leading the troops in person. They'll follow the Warrior Prime. I'm giving control of the fleet over to Beckett. He was right, damn him. He has the experience. All I can do is hope the bastard stays loyal. Now get out of my sight, both of you, and don't fail me!
They passed Inspector Razor and Kid Death coming in, but kept their eyes carefully averted. Investigator Razor and Lord Kit Summerisle, Kid Death, approached the Iron Throne, stopped to save distance from the maids-in-waiting, and bowed respectfully to the Empress.
Well, well. My two favorite killers. How nice. I should be angry with you, Razor. I sent you to conquer Mistworld in my name, and you failed. But it wasn't really your fault. So many people failed me on that mission, but you stayed true. And Kid Death, my smiling assassin. You brought me the young Deathstalker's head, the only good thing to come out of that debacle. You always brought me the nicest present, Summerisle. I've got it here on a spike somewhere. It is good to have you both back here with me. Good to have people around me I can depend on. Your duties here are simple, to protect me from any and all dangers. The odds against any of the rebels getting this far are vanishingly small, especially since I had the extra ESP blockers installed. But it seems I can no longer depend on all my people to do their duty. There are many layers of defense between my palace and the surface, not all of them human, and I am not entirely helpless myself. But I'll feel better with you two watching over me. Any comments? Bearing in mind that they'd better be extremely constructive and to the point if you like your heads where they are.
An honor to serve your majesty, as always. I take great pride in the confidence that you have invested in me. But I feel I should point out that with my sword to guard you, I really don't see the need for the Summerhouse presence. I am a professional fighting man of long standing. The young lord is at best a gifted amateur, with an exceptional track record.
A gifted amateur with an exceptional record has to be a better bet than a tired old man who's already been retired once. Send this obsolete ancient away, your majesty. You don't need him while you've got me. And I don't want to be distracted trying to keep him alive as well as you, your highness.
You don't have to like each other. Just do your job. And don't get too close to the maids. I haven't fed them recently.
Lionstone smiled fondly at her two defenders.
Don't worry, my most loyal subjects. Once this nonsense is over and order has been restored, as it will be, I promise you both all the killing you can handle. The executions will last all day and all night, and blood will flow in the streets like tides.
She turned away from them, ignoring their deep bows, and switched the floating view screens to the main news channels. The rebels were still shutting down military and security comm channels as fast as new ones were set up, but they left the news channels alone. They wanted the people to see what was going on. All the floating screens showed a different news report, from all over Golgotha, but mainly from the Parade of the Endless, where the real fighting was. Urgent voices spilled out into the court, loud, overlapping, almost hysterical. News of the rebellion was coming in from 100 worlds at once, and the news stations were going crazy trying to keep up with it all. Lionstone fixed her attention on screen after screen, trying for an overview of the situation. She no longer trusted her own security reports.